Okay. Now, as I said, Saturday night, this is a class on Proverbs. There won't be any PowerPoint. The only PowerPoint that's at my house is when Suzanne points and says, do something about that. That's my concept of what a PowerPoint is. But hopefully that won't be. I know everybody likes the PowerPoint and everybody seems to do the PowerPoint, but I don't even own a cell phone. So that's, my technology is limited. Now, just by a show of hands, how many in this audience right now have been or are right now professional teachers? Just raise your hand. Man, okay. How many people in here besides, I know they would also be this, but how many people in here teach at your ecclesia? Great. Now, the reason I ask that is I want to ask you this question. I have an answer for it, and I hope you do too, but what's the basic tenet of teaching? Any thoughts?
Be yourself.
That's good.
Have knowledge.
Good. Impart knowledge. That's good too.
Build relationships.
Nice. My tenet, Dave,
work
Brother David.
Students to death so they don't work you to death.
There you go. I've been in classrooms like that. I've been in schools like that. My basic tenet is never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. And I'm going to tell you right now, this entire week, that tenet will be broken. So, you know, you better get ready. Okay, I'm going to give you three things here. And I want you to tell me which one of these three is the most important. All right, here they are. Knowledge and understanding. Number one. Number two, baptism. Number three, walk. Which is most important, and tell me why?
Knowledge.
Okay. Can you give me a reason why?
Well, because the others don't come until you get knowledge first.
You don't get to baptism until you get knowledge.
Yeah, right.
All right. Anybody else have a thought? Patsy? Right on the nose for me. David, Brother Dave?
You can make an argument for baptism. Yeah. Because if you're not baptized, you have no hope.
Yeah, that's really the best answer. I mean, all three of them are equally important. Now, here's the next question. Is that a hand? No? Okay. Here's the next question. If we, and perish the thought, I hate to think of this for anyone, if we are rejected at the judgment seat, what will be the reason? Think of those three things. Okay. What about your walk? Tell me something about your walk that if you are unable to do, might get you rejected at the judgment seat. Something that, involves your walk. Okay. Who said that? Kevin? Raise your hand, Kevin. All right, that's the one... That's the one that I'd like to talk about for just a second. How we treat each other. How important is that? Incredibly important. Not to belittle any of the other answers that were given, but if we're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, so to speak, could that keep us out of the kingdom, or would that keep us out of the kingdom? I don't think so. Now, you know, I get called on the carpet a lot in North Little Rock because I offer what I think is scripture, and it turns out that it's just opinion. But I'm just going to say, the way we treat other people, we're going to be held accountable for. All right, that's good. All right, what's that got to do with Proverbs? Bad question. What is a proverb? What is a proverb? Just a short definition, Jonathan.
A wise saying.
Okay. Do men have proverbs? There's biblical proverbs. Men have proverbs. Anybody have a man-made short truism that they can whip on us right now? I got that one down. A stitch. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Okay.
That's
in my, don't say that one. I've got that. I've got that later on in my notes.
Happy wife, happy life. The road to destruction is paved with good intentions.
Man, there's a great one. Well, who said that other one? Kevin. Go ahead. I heard some of it, and I know it was good.
Happy wife, happy life.
Happy wife, happy life. All right. Keep in mind now, these are man-made proverbs. I've got a couple things here. One of which I'd like to talk with you a little bit about, because I often use it when I teach, and you know, mostly I teach the kids. I use it a lot with them because I guess what I'm trying to get across to them is that if you choose the life of being a servant of Jesus Christ, you're going to be a little bit different from those around you. True? Okay. All right. Hopefully, right. I think that's what I heard, hopefully. All right. Let me just give you mine here. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Anything wrong with that? Anything unscriptural? I mean, it's not scriptural, but anything that would be bad about that? All right. There you go. Are you a farmer or... Well, you know, that sounds funny, but how did Christ relate to the disciples and the apostles? How did he relate to them? What was a lot of the symbology that he used? Agricultural things, yeah. Why? That's what they understood. I mean, that's what was meaningful to them. Okay, let me see. Where was I? Do you remember what I asked? Oh, yeah. Okay, here's my second one. Fish and company go bad. This is a little Ben Franklin. Fish and company go bad after 3 days. Ever had that problem? Fish and company grow bad after 3 days. Yeah. Don't bite off more than you can chew. I mean, don't take more upon yourself than you can actually handle. I think that's a truism. Why? Why would it be true? The more you take upon yourself, the less likely... Would you prefer to know a little bit about a whole lot, or would you prefer to be very knowledgeable about the Bible, for instance? You know, you'd rather know a little, a lot about something that's really important, rather than being, you know, well-rounded and know a little bit about everything. Take one day at a time. Brother Bob. Master of none. That's better than mine. Okay. Jack of all trades, master of none. Take one day at a time. Kind of goes along with that other one. Now, this is the one that I like to use with the kids, and I'd like to discuss this a little bit, and I'm going to read. And I'm sorry to do that. I really hate to read out of books to people, because I know after about the first two sentences, they're gone. But I'm going to read a little bit about this topic from Elpis Israel, because I think Brother Thomas does a very good job with this. First of all, we got to understand what's being said here. The nail that sticks up gets hammered down. What does that mean? The nail that sticks up gets hammered down. Patsy?
It looks different.
Okay. I often say it to the kids. The Christadelphian that sticks up gets hammered down. Yes, Ann? Okay. Yeah, the oil doesn't need the grease. The wheel needs the grease. Okay, now here's what I'm referring to. And Brother Charles alluded to this on Saturday night. The society that we live in, are we going to be different than the people around us? We are. You know, we're going to be different than the people around us. Do you think there's many politicians in this country out there today that come out against same-sex marriages? Why not? Hey, if you're a politician, you have to get elected before you can do something. I mean, that's just common sense. But, you know, they're going to do what they have to do. Now, are we at liberty to take that kind of attitude? No. Why not? I mean, we follow the commandments of God. If God says that that's not right, then it's not right. And it doesn't matter what other people around us do. Now, the reason I like to mention that to the kids is because, you know, you were kids. I didn't grow up as a Christadelphian, and sometimes I don't mean this to be flippant, but sometimes I think, man, I'm glad I wasn't because, you know, of the things that I did. But, you know, it's tougher on the kids, but it's no easy task for us. Now, it's not too hard for me because I'm retired. I don't have to go to work every day and be around other people and listen to the things they say and watch the things that they do. So, it's a little easier for me. But if you're out there in the world, you know, things are tough. Now, let me ask you, and I guess this is more of an opinion than it is anything else. What do you think the time of the end is going to be like? Like Noah's time? Do you think things could get pretty bad? Do you think Christadelphians might be in a worse position than we are right now? Are there examples throughout Scripture, throughout history, of those things occurring? Okay. Remember now, what we're talking about here is the nail that sticks up gets hammered down. All right, next question. Can somebody tell me who the Huguenots were? If you've read Elpis Israel, you probably will remember a little bit. Yeah. Okay, they were, I'm not going to call them Christians, I'll say they're Protestants. Okay, they're French, yes, French. Okay, they're the French Huguenots. Now, I'm not sure about this. Someone who has read Dr. Thomas more than I could probably tell you better, but I'm pretty sure from what I've read that Dr. Thomas thought that they had certain elements of the truth. Would that be a correct statement? Okay. Now, the Huguenots, do you remember the edict that was passed that kind of gave them carte blanche to do what they wanted to do? The edict. Is that how you say that? I always said the Edict of Nantes or Nantes. Okay, the Edict of Nantes. All right, that gave them kind of carte blanche, which meant that they could teach, preach, do what they wanted to do, and you know that's exactly what they did. They had schools, they had universities, they had churches. They were kind of what you would call a self-enclosed community. They were pretty much on their own. No problems. Okay, now, I want to pick this up, and this is where I'm going to read a little bit from Dr. Thomas. And I'm sorry again. Excuse me. I'm sorry again to have to do this, but Louis XIV determined to accomplish the suppression of the Huguenots in France. Think, could this happen to us? Is it possible? The plan was arranged in the spirit of the Jesuits. The Jesuits were pretty difficult to deal with, members of the Catholic Church. The Society of Jesus, started by a man named Ignatius Loyola, who was wounded severely in a war in Spain, laying on his bed, thinking about what he was going to do, he said, or thought to himself, I'm going to establish an order of priests that is going to bring the Catholic Church to the top, to the only church acceptable. That's not a good explanation, but that's the one I gave. All right. And pursued with dreadful perseverance, referring to their newborn zeal for the Bourbon dynasty. All right, I'm going to skip some stuff. I hope this doesn't ruin the continuity here. They were persecuted in every way imaginable. Not the Jesuits, the Huguenots. Persecuted in every way imaginable. Orders were printed at Paris, sent from there to all the cities and parishes of the kingdom, which empowered the parochial priests, the church wardens, and others to make an exact inquiry into whatever and any of the reforms might have done or said for 20 years past, as well as on the subject of religion as otherwise, to make information of this before the justices of the peace, punish them to the utmost extremity, talking about the Huguenots. Thus the prisons and dungeons everywhere in France were filled with these pretended criminals. Orders were issued. They were deprived in general of all sorts of offices and employments. Skipping down a little further. Now a college was suppressed. Then a Huguenot church was shut down or burned. And at length they were forbidden to worship in public at all by the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, passed in 1685. Rude, popish missionaries without learning or decency went from house to house for the purpose of inducing them to abjure or give up their religion. They interrupted the preacher, and if the congregation forcibly ejected these papists, the papists complained to the magistrates, who took that opportunity to shut down the church. Skipping on. Profligate, merciless soldiers of Catholicism were sent into the houses of the Huguenots, into their homes. They had orders to resort to every method except assassination to convert the victims to papalism. They laid waste their property. They destroyed their household goods. They treated mothers, wives, and maidens in an infamous manner, brutally struck the men, and by a refinement of cruelty hindered them from taking an hour's rest until they signed over and became members of the Catholic Church. Some crushed beneath such accumulated sufferings lost their reason. Others, led away by despair, suffered death at their own hands, committed suicide. Okay, it gets a little worse, and I'm not going to read too much more. Just one more little paragraph. Those who left France were in the most deplorable condition. Deprived of their leaders and having no regular means of religious instruction, they pursued like rebels. They met at distant intervals in some wild retreat. When they were surprised, the soldiers fired on them without mercy, as if they had been ferocious animals. Thousands of poor victims were condemned to the galleys. Galleys, not gallows. And were there confounded with the vilest wretches. Others were hung, beheaded, or burned. If a dying man moved to remorse, disavowed in his last moments the popish religion to which he had conformed during his life, his dead body was dragged through the streets by the hangman, and it was afterwards cast into a receptacle for filth, like the carcass of an unclean beast. Now, I'd like to think that God would not allow anything like that to happen to us. What are your thoughts? Again, I ask the question, how bad could it be? Brother Pat. Okay. Jamil? Okay. Brother Wilton? Good, good. That's why I said what I said. But for the people in the world, could that be a possibility? You know, will that happen? It's something to think about. Again, I'm not saying that's what's in store for us, but things like this have happened down through history. It's almost inconceivable how inhumanly men have treated other men. And it has to do with the Proverbs, Proverbs. It has to do with the Proverbs, because Proverbs developed the human mind with wisdom, with knowledge. And I'm not saying that wisdom and knowledge aren't important, but I think there's one more thing to add to that's just as important, if not more important. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. I think it's been said several times in here already this week that you can have all the knowledge and wisdom that you want, but if you don't understand how it's supposed to be applied, then you haven't done yourself very much good. Okay, let me go on here. I'm going to look at 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 30 and 32. I'll read this, but if you want to turn it up, that's fine. Here's what it says. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East Country and all the wisdom of Egypt. He spake 3,000 proverbs. Is that an accurate statement? He spake 3,000 proverbs. Accurate. Who really spake? Whose proverbs are these? They're not Solomon's. What good did all of this knowledge do Solomon? Solomon ever make any mistakes? All right, what did he do? What mistakes did he make? Big mistake. Big mistake. I'm just involving myself in foolishness, which is what I'm going to be talking against all week long. Had 1,000 wives, and the wisdom did not do him as much good as it should have. Now, if he had had complete understanding, that would have been a different matter. I think he would have done a little better. All right, what are proverbs then again? Now, the definition that was given was very good. I want to just add a little bit to it. They are brief, meaningful statements of, fill that in. Right, God's truth. Brief, meaningful statements of God's truth by which we can what? Think back to walk. Learn. The proverbs, there probably is no situation that you can get yourself in on a daily basis where you cannot find a proverb that will help you in your time of need, that will help you out of the situation that you have gotten yourself into if you don't feel good about it. Okay, they are powerful. They're just brief statements, but they have great meaning. If you use these things, they can direct your walk. I'll say it that way. They are meaningful. All right. Do they apply to a certain time period and that time period only? No. Past, present, and long, if Christ does not return, long after all of us are gone, they will still be meaningful. The world may not pay any attention to them, any more attention to them then than they do now, but they will still they will still be meaningful. They will still be, what would you say, utilitarian or useful. They will be useful. Usually, they are easily understood. It's not like reading, Revelations. It's a simple statement of fact. If we will listen to them, then we will influence our actions in a positive way. I'm not talking now about the wisdom or the proverbs of men. I'm talking about the proverbs that God spake through Solomon. All civilized communities use proverbs as a means to action. In other words, well, how would you interpret that? As a means to action, or as a means to get what? Men to, act in a certain way. They are designed to make us act in a certain way. If you don't fill your mind, let me just put it this way. I think I said this when I was in Colorado, but nature abhors a vacuum. If you don't fill your mind with the proverbs, what do you fill your mind with? Trivia. Things in the world that are nice, they're pleasant, but things in the world do not lead to what? Do not lead to eternal life. Okay, that's good. Let me see here. Here's a question. How do proverbs of the Bible and the proverbs of men differ? That ought to be easy. How are they different? Okay, what are those two kinds of advice?
Good and
The opinions of men as opposed to the truth of God. Biblical Proverbs, very plain and simple, recognize God as the ruling factor in the behavior of human beings, which human proverbs do not. Now, I say that tongue in cheek because if you look around the world, do you see people being directed by God's wisdom? I don't know. I don't think there's much of that that's going on. Hopefully that's not the case amongst the Christadelphian community. All right. Biblical Proverbs owe their origin to the inspiration of God. Now, God gave Solomon wisdom exceeding much. And we've already answered this question. Is wisdom enough? Wisdom by itself or knowledge by itself, it is not enough. There has to be an understanding. I know brothers that can quote scripture, and it's amazing to me what they can do. But is quoting scripture sufficient? What do you have to do? You have to live it. You have to be able to use it in your daily life. It all goes back again. What's going to be the most beneficial thing for you as far as your walk in the truth is concerned? What's going to help you the most? Okay, excuse me. Paul tells us that the voice speaking in the Proverbs is the voice of God speaking to us as what? Mature adults? No. Children. Why does God often refer to us as children? Because to him we are children. That's exactly where we are. Now, I know this is a little bit morbid, but, you know, I'm talking about someone who's born and raised in a Christadelphian family, has been exposed to God's truth through their life. All right, they go, and I don't want to mention any specific age number, but, you know, we all get to that number that's the end for us. And have at that point, have you reached total comprehension and knowledge of the Bible? Have you come close? Speaking for myself only, I'll say, no, I'm not even going to be close. Of course, he could take me tomorrow and, you know, I would not even be close. So we die, that knowledge that we've accumulated dies with us, and then the next generation comes up and they go through the same process. None of this will ever be fulfilled completely until what? When Christ comes back, then, you know, then we'll have what we're supposed to have. Brother Wilton?
Christ told Peter, he says, when thou art converted, feed my sheep. You know?
Right, right. So he kind of
reached that point.
Yeah, it kind of seems like he had a little doubt there, yeah. You know, about Peter. Right. Okay. We are called his little children. Therefore, because God is in them, biblical proverbs are far superior to human proverbs. As long-sightedness and accuracy are superior to short-sightedness and error. Okay, now we're ready to start with the first proverb, Brother Bill said, you know, we're kind of limited here. I've got, I think, 48 proverbs, and I basically used Brother Robert's book as to the proverbs that I chose. If we go through all 48, I've got the book with me. I'll write out some more. But I don't know if we're going to make all 48 or not. But the nice thing about this is wherever we get, let me just say, and I know many of you have done comprehensive studies of Proverbs, but if I can pique your interest, then I guess I've accomplished as much as I can do. Okay, the first proverb involves the value of wise parental instruction. Proverbs 1:8, my son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. All right, what is being assumed in this proverb? That mom and dad are what? Followers of Christ, okay? That mom and dad have the ability to dispense the wisdom of God to their children. Now, do you think that's being seen in the world? I'll let you answer that. Parental instruction is wise. This is what's being assumed. And is according to God's truth. I said, opinion now, unfortunately in today's society, this is not very often the case. Why not? Because people don't care about God's instruction. What do people care about? They care about wealth. Instant what? Instant gratification. Is this easy? No. You know, what's it say about, I'm not going to call anybody, but how would you go after buried treasure? If somebody said, hey, you know, you've got, you know, $100,000 buried in your backyard, how would you go after it?
Intensely.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't sit there and say, I might go out there tomorrow and look a little bit. But so how are you to go after this? Even more so. The treasure that's in your backyard, I know you know this, it's very, very simple. The treasure in your backyard is what?
Perishable.
It's going to go away. The treasure that's in that book is eternal. Okay, good. All right, let me see what else I have here. You tell me if this is true. A general rule is it safe to say children should follow the counsel of their parents? And I say Christadelphian and Christadelphian families. I would hope that that would be true. Do you think it's true? Okay. All right. Parents, well, what reason? Why is it, you know, I don't want to, you know, get morbid again, but at North Little Rock, we've lost, in a short space of time, we've lost Brother Ben Scroggins, Sister Shirley Brown, who else? Brother Roger Brown. We lost them. Would you qualify them as treasure?
Yeah, I would.
I've kind of been struggling here lately a little bit, and you know, the other night I thought, man, I wish Roger or Shirley were here where I could go and sit down. Not that there aren't many in here that could, you know, would fulfill the same function. I'm not saying that, but I thought, man, I wish they were here so I could go and say, you know, what am I supposed to do? What should I do here? They're not here. So it is what it is. Parents by experience should know what things are better for their children. Does this proverb actually apply? Listen to this carefully. Is this proverb actually talking about your immediate family circle? Is that what it's talking about? I'll just give you my opinion. I don't think it is. What else could it be talking about if it's not talking about your family? Good. Could be talking about the ecclesia. I think that's a... Say again? Okay. All right. I wrote this. Well, let me ask it as a question. What does Solomon stand in for? I know, you know, what I'm saying is these proverbs come through God to Solomon. So Solomon stands in as kind of what? When we read Proverbs, it's not like we're listening to mom and dad, we're listening to God. So Solomon is kind of what? Yeah, okay, that's good. I was thinking, you know, he's kind of like a father and a mother to us. No, I said Solomon stands in as a God-directed parent for each of us, a wise mother and father to be listened to. Troy, you always listen to mom and dad? Foy's answer is sufficient. Supplying any natural lack of guidance that we have. Any parents out there think they were perfect in raising your kids? Are Christadelphian kids perfect? I'm not going to say. I never raised any. I'm not going to say. All right, so again, you know, it brings us back to this point. Who are the children? Who are the sons and daughters that are referred to in this proverb? Us, yeah, it's us. It's the kids and it's us. It's all of us. We're all God's children. Brother Dick.
Honor thy mother and thy time for this life that we have here.
Okay. I'll go along with that. All right. Young and old, all you young people that are here today, we are God's children. It is necessary for all of us to heed the wisdom of God so that we might walk worthy of the station to which we are called. So, here comes the question again. How are we supposed to come to God? As little children. I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I'm going to ask it. Do you remember when Christ was trying to make a point with the apostles, and he had them kind of in a circle, and he was sitting in the middle, and what did the little child do? Came and crawled up and got in Christ's lap. What's the point? Christ said, "You must come to me as this little child." That's paraphrasing, but that's the point he was making. That's how we are supposed to go to God. Well, what are the characteristics of little children that make that statement true? How, you know, what did that little kid feel when he crawled up? He didn't know Christ. He crawled up in his lap. He knew there was something what? Something special about this man. And he did not hesitate to crawl up into his lap. Now, I know that this is not appropriate, but I got to tell this story because my wife thinks that the dog likes her more than she does me. We have a little dog. It was Shirley's dog, but we got it every chance we could get, even when Shirley was still living, and brought it down to our house. So it's living with us. Well, last winter, I was in the recliner because that's where I have to get. I can't sit on the couch because the dog and Suzanne have the couch. So anyway, it was a pretty cold night, and the dog was sleeping, and I was about half asleep too. All of a sudden, she yelped and jumped up, ran across that room, jumped up and got in my lap, and got as close to me as she could, and just started shivering. We don't have kids, so you got to understand that. I know you're sitting there going, "Jim, it's a dog." You know, come on, man, it's a dog. But I kind of got a tear in my eye. But just think how Christ must have felt when that little child, of course he probably knew it was going to happen, but I'm sure he felt some emotion, when that little child crawled up into his lap because he knew that's where he would be safe. That's where he would be secure. And that's where, you know, that's why we are to come to Christ as little children, because he makes us feel the same way, or he should make us feel the same way. Okay, any questions, any thoughts on that first one? All right. Yes, sir.
Jesus also said in that same context, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven."
Good.
So it's that childlike disposition and teachable.
That's, I'm glad you brought that. Gerald said teachableness. What else is a characteristic of a little child? We said innocence, trust. Now, in this world, you know, I used to say, well, you know, if you turn the other cheek where I came from in Philadelphia, you usually got hit twice. You got hit on the other cheek as well. So, you know, you didn't turn your cheek, you kind of face forward. But, that's not, you know, that's how things are. That's how things are in the world. I'll just mention this. Do you feel comfortable going out into the world? There's sometimes when I think, man, you know, I just as soon stay right here in the house and not even go out in that. But then I know the groceries are out there, so I go. But you know, it's a wicked world, and I don't want to overstate it or understate it. But you know, Kevin was telling me the other day that he was in a supermarket and he saw some things that certainly wouldn't want the boys to see, or he didn't even want to see it. But it's out there, and I don't, you know, it's not going to affect us, hopefully. But you know, things that you see, things that you hear, it seems like, well, if you turn on the news, what do you hear? Bad stuff. I mean, it's all. That's all there is. All right, number two. The beauty of wisdom. And I'm going to have, I hope I can get to it. Oh, gosh. One, got to one. Here's the proverb. It's 1:9. It's the next one. Wisdom and instruction shall be an ornament of grace. Now, I said I wouldn't call on anybody, but I know this brother knows the definition of grace. Brother Sidney, are you back there? Tell me what you told me again the definition of grace is. Be careful now how you start out. Getting what we don't deserve. Okay. Mercy is? Go ahead. Something that we deserve, but we don't get it. Okay, that's God's mercy. Good. All right, again, wisdom and instruction shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about the neck. Now, I'm a little confused about the chains around the neck thing because that's a natural adornment, but maybe somebody has an insight on that. How would you compare wisdom and folly? Can you even compare them? Are they even in the same area code or... Okay, that's good. Thank you. All right, they are way beyond comparison. There is no comparison. Ecclesiastes 2:13. I'm going to read it, so I don't. You don't have to turn that up. Wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. Light and darkness are synonyms for what?
Ignorance and knowledge.
Okay, good. When would you say the human behavior, and I hope he doesn't ring the bell before I can read this, because this is a quote from Brother Roberts. Okay. When would you say the human behavior, the natural behavior of man, appears to be at its very best? Don't bother answering. This is what Brother Roberts said. When godly wisdom begins in the human heart and guides it in the way of the God's truth, here's what Brother Robert says, it is one of the numberless proofs of the divinity of the Bible that a man's entirely subject to God's wisdom, listen to this next part, and put woman in here too, would be the loveliest specimen of manhood upon the earth. When God's wisdom fills a man's heart, or a woman's heart, they become the loveliest specimen of manhood, womanhood upon the earth. And I think that's a beautiful way of saying it. Okay, we're out of time. I'll stop right there.